Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP professional, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. And you can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. Podcasts of prior shows are also available under Public Affairs. And then you look for Your Financial Choices and go down to the programs of your choice. Today is January 29th, 2020. The markets were mixed today with the Dow closing up at 28,734, the NASDAQ up at 92.75, and the S&P down at 32.73. And that, of course, is over yesterday's numbers. They were all down from the prior week, however. Our topic tonight is getting ready for tax season. We are live tonight. We will take your questions. Lori C. is in the studio with us this evening. We'll answer your calls, take your information, and we ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we can talk without confusion. We discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic and I will do my best to answer them. The number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. Last week, I talked about the SECURE Act. So that podcast is available again at wdiy.org and at yourfinancialchoices.com. And so if you have any questions about that, you certainly can call in and ask questions as well. But tonight, I thought I would kind of review what you need to do thinking about getting ready to do your tax return and help you kind of go through a little bit of a checklist. First, I just want to mention Lehigh Valley SCORE is a great organization in our community and offers a lot of seminars and tools for people who are in business, thinking about getting into business, thinking about getting out of business. Their website is lehighvalley.score.org. So lehighvalley.score.org. And they have a class coming up Tuesday, February 4th from 6 to 9 p.m. called Starting a Business, the First 100 Days. And I believe it's at Northampton Community College. And it talks about if you're thinking about starting a business, you need to understand what you must accomplish in the first 100 days. You may have a good understanding of your product or your service, but do you understand the business aspect? In other words, you have crossed your T's and dotted your I's. Girish Sood of Lehigh Valley SCORE will help with that presentation. So keep that in mind. We have a caller already. Thank you. We have Michelle from Easton on air. Hi, Michelle. Can you hear me?
Hi. Yes, I can.
Hi. How can I help you?
Well, you and I have spoken before regarding Trump's tax cuts, rates, whatever. And how I'm one of the few middle class that were not able to benefit because, like, my daughter was a junior in high school and then a senior, and I couldn't claim her to get the $2,000. And then with the personal exemptions gone, I couldn't get really anything but that $500.
Okay.
And you said, yeah, this is you're one of the few.
Uh-huh.
So here's my next question for you.
Mm-hmm.
We're back again to another year where she would have been a senior, and then she had her first semester of college.
Fall of 2019.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So I have paid out of pocket probably around $10,000.
Yep.
out of pocket,
mm-hmm.
to for her room and board. Very lucky she got scholarships and everything like that, so I'm not complaining about that. My question is, when I was kind of playing around with my taxes, and I also went back for my master's, so I paid $2,300
mm-hmm.
In 2019. It says in there that because I made over $80,000, which wasn't much over $80,000, and I'm a single mother of three children, two of which are in daycare,
mm-hmm.
I can't get really anything, but it's like a couple hundred dollars with her.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing for me,
mm-hmm.
but only a couple hundred dollars for her. But if I was married, it would be $160,000.
Right.
How does that make any sense? And is there something that I'm doing wrong, or can I do? Because then I thought, well, I'll just have my daughter do her taxes. She doesn't have a job. She should be at least be able to get that $1,000. And it said, oh, by the way, there's a stipulation. If your parents make too much money, you can't do it.
Well, there is stipulations about, yeah, being a dependent, and you have to have income to get the credit, and there's no refundable credit to a child if they're trying to claim it. You think, oh, their income's low, maybe they can get it, and there's a refundable portion. There's all kinds of rules around that. So whoever claims the child is the one who would get the credit. But one of the things that would happen, Michelle, if you're a head of household, yeah, it is interesting that for a qualifying widow, single, and head of household, the range for the American Opportunity Credit is between $80,000 and $90,000. What happens with the American Opportunity Credit is, yes, you have to have $4,000 out of pocket, but the American Opportunity Credit applies to tuition and fees, books and supplies, not room and board. So one of the things that some people do is, if there is a scholarship, they could reclassify the scholarship as taxable in order to get the tuition credit. It's very complicated. I'm not going to go into that right now. But one of the things you might want to think about is, and again, this all depends on your cash flow. As a head of household, you may be able to put more money into your retirement account at work, which would bring down your wages, which would bring down your income. And you may be able to do, if you don't have an employer plan at work, you could do an IRA and make a deductible IRA that could help bring down your income, that might be able to help you qualify for the American Opportunity Credit. But again, the American Opportunity Credit applies to qualified expenses for tuition and fees, not the room and board. So if she got a scholarship for tuition, there is a little thing you can do. It's a little more complicated. I would have to probably explain that like on a different show, or you could call me and I could try to explain it to you. Okay. But okay. There is something you might be able to do for that. But it could be that your daughter would treat the tuition scholarship, if that's what she got, as income. And then you may qualify for the American Opportunity Credit, because between the $80,000 and $90,000 adjusted gross income range, that you could get some of it. So that's for her. And then for you, there's a tuition and fees deduction and the lifetime learning credit, but your income is probably over the thresholds for that. Right. There's a phase out range for tuition and fees deduction, which is between 65 and 80. And then the lifetime learning is between 58 and 68. So if there's a way for you to reduce your income through your employer plan at work, putting more money into your plan, it means you're going to have less cash flow, but you could qualify for a free $2,500 credit as long as you have $4,000 out of pocket for tuition fees and, books and equipment and things.
Yeah. Okay. Well, my taxable income, without the personal exemptions, my taxable income skyrocketed.
Mm. Okay.
Because I've looked back at the past 8 years, and I was doing great, and I was, and then as soon as his things went into started last year.
Yeah, with the tax.
My taxable income went up $16,000 because my personal exemptions were $16,000.
Right, and now you only get the $2,000 child tax credit if the children are, I think, under 17.
Right. So I have two kids, and that's the thing. I don't have cash flow.
Mm-hmm.
I am by myself. I have to pay for daycare, which the maximum deduction is $1,200. I pay well over $10,000 just for before and after care.
Right. Hey, if your employer has flexible spending for dependent care, that would help. You'd save more money doing it through there.
Would it consider that? Would that take down my income?
That would take down your income, yes.
So if I took the amount out that I spent this year on before and after care...
Well, no, they limit it. You can only do, I think, $2,500 for dependent. It might be $5,000 now, dependent care. I'd have to look that up, and I could try to look that up at the break. So it's a max of $5,000 normally for dependent care. But I think they were changing the rules on that at one point, saying each spouse could do $2,500, max of five. I don't know if one spouse can still do five.
Well, there's no spouse.
Right, I know, I know. So if you're head of household, I have to check to see if you can still do five. But you do save more taxes and cash flow by doing it through flexible spending account. You just have to make sure you use it. So that would bring down your income, yes.
Okay, so I'll look into that.
So it could help for 2020, but the open enrollment period when you choose those is usually in the fall. So you'd have to maybe indicate that you had a life change that caused you to, you know, want to update it.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll have to research that.
Yes. Yeah.
So if these Trump tax cuts, whatever, are supposed to be in effect until 2025, mm-hmm. if somebody else goes into the presidency, can they renege them and change them? Or are they like, we're stuck with it?
Well, Congress would have to do... You know, any tax reform. Congress would have to vote on any tax reform. So a president could push through their agenda and say, this is what I want, but Congress is the one that votes on tax reform.
So, but it is possible.
It is possible. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Okay, Michelle, thank you. And good luck, okay?
Thanks.
Thank you for the question. Bye. Folks, we are at our first break. The phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Spread the word about your business or organization to a well-informed audience. Become an underwriter with WDIY. Our lineup of NPR News and locally produced programs reaches thousands of engaged listeners in the Lehigh Valley and beyond. Underwriting on WDIY is an affordable and effective way to provide information about your product and services to people who care. To learn more about underwriting opportunities, 610-694-8100, extension 6, or WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. We are talking about getting ready for tax season. And Michelle, I didn't have time on my break to look up the dependent care deduction, and I'll look that up on the next one and let you know throughout the show. Folks, we are talking about getting ready. What do you need to pay attention to? And I just thought I would go through a few things because I think it's important to understand what your situation is. So one of the things that's going to happen, whether you're preparing your own tax return or you're having someone prepare the tax return, basically you have to collect all these tax documents. And how you collect these tax documents should be pretty easy. And that's because when you're checking your mail, any envelope that has stamped on the outside of it, important tax information and closed, is definitely something you need for your tax return, because it's required by law that if someone is sending you important tax information, that they stamp it that on the outside of the envelope. So we are talking about a W-2, which is your, if you are working and you're an employee and your employer issues you a W-2, you're either going to get it in your mailbox at work or you're going to get it in the mail. You might have it online available, but they probably still will alert you that it's ready. W-2, envelope, important tax information enclosed. That's your wages, your salary. You may be a contract employee. It's not an employee, a contract worker. You're self-employed and you work for other people. If they pay you more than $600, they are required to issue you a 1099, and it's going to be a 1099 miscellaneous. So you're going to want to watch for that to come in the mail. These documents should be prepared by January 31st. So if you don't have them by the first week of February, you could reach out to the employer or the vendor that you're working with or contracting with and, you know, ask them, where is my tax document? Interest income is another one from your local bank. You may be sitting there thinking, when am I going to get my 1099? When am I going to get my 1099? Lori said it was supposed to be January 31st. I should be getting it from the interest on my bank account. Well, think about it. Is the interest on your bank account $10 or more? If it's not, they don't have to issue you a 1099. So you're not going to get a 1099. Generally, you can look at your December statement and see at the bottom of a December statement, usually it'll have a little legend that will say year-to-date interest paid. If it's less than $10, you're not going to get a 1099. So don't worry about it. So that's a 1099 INT for interest. A 1099 DIV, D-I-V for dividend. A 1099 dividend, typically we see these also. They're supposed to be January 31st. You know, you should get it in the first week. But what happens is if you are with let's say, what do you call it? Like a transfer agent, a clearinghouse, CompuServe, forgot the other names. If you have your dividends direct with one of those agents and it's equities, it's a stock, a single stock, chances are you will get your 1099. But if your if you have a stock in a brokerage account with a financial advisor, a custodian, and you have mutual funds as well, that will be delayed because years ago, the mutual funds would have to kind of balance their books and figure out what kind of dividends and capital gains they had to report to the owner of the funds. And then, you know, 3 weeks later, 4 weeks later, they would change it and they would have to revise it and send out a corrected 1099. So it just got so crazy, like correcting all these 1099s, that these companies went to the IRS and said, hey, can we have an extension on when we have to file these? Because if you just let us, you know, give us a little bit more time, we can figure out these numbers and then issue a good 1099 without having to correct them later. IRS said, okay. So a lot of times, though, if you have mutual funds, those are going to take a little longer. But again, individual stocks, you're probably going to get a 1099 DIV, and it's probably going to be reported fairly timely. But typically, and if you sell stock, they have to issue what's called a 1099B, B for brokerage sales or something. So you would get a 1099B. But what we see more often is when people are working with a custodian or a broker or a financial advisor, what you're more likely to get is something called a consolidated 1099. And it's one report. And that consolidated 1099 will reflect the interest on your brokerage account, 1099 INT. There's going to be a section 1099 DIV, and there's going to be a section 1099B. All on one statement. So there again, that could be delayed. You're probably not even going to get it till maybe the end of February, mid-February, end of February. It's not as timely as the W-2s and the 1099s miscellaneouses have to be. So just be a little patient with that. A lot of times people will call me and say, hey, we know these are supposed to be done already. Well, several years ago, the custodians worked with the IRS and they all determined they get a little bit of an extension to get those filed. Typically, what you also will get timely would be a 1099-R, R for retirement. If you're someone who is retired, you might be getting a pension. You could be taking money out of your IRA. You might have an annuity you're using to live on in your retirement. You might be a beneficiary of an IRA, and you would also get a 1099-R for that. You might have converted IRA monies to a Roth. You'd get a 1099-R for that. You might have done a rollover of a retirement plan into an IRA rollover. You might get a 1099-R for that. what you will see when you receive your 1099s is they have codes on them. And these codes on the 1099s are very important to the preparer to know what it is you received and how they have to report it. A big flag on a 1099 R for an IRA distribution would be if you are 70 and a half and you took some of your money out of an IRA and gave it to charity in something called a qualified charitable distribution, that is not reflected on your 1099 R. And if you're preparing the return yourself, you need to know that you have to pull that out of the taxable portion of the in the box on the 1099 that says taxable. If you gave money to a charity out of your IRA, you have to subtract it out of there and code the filing to reflect QCD, qualified charitable distribution. If you're having a preparer do it, you need to let them know, hey, I did X amount of dollars to a qualified charitable distribution, and then you want to show them the proof that you did it out of your IRA so they know to reduce the dollars from your IRA. It has to be direct out of your IRA. When we come back from this next break, I'm going to talk a little bit more about the forms, and then I'm going to talk about some of the other information that's really important to know for getting ready for your taxes. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY offers many choices and real voices.
This is Rosalie.
And Steve.
Join us and other hosts each Sunday from 5 to 7 p.m. for Swing Sunday, a great mix of swing, big band, and classic vocals.
WDIY is the Lehigh Valley's local source for NPR news, public affairs, and diverse music at 88.1 FM and streaming on WDIY.org.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert, and we are talking about getting ready for tax season. I was just going over some of the forms that you need to pay attention to and watch for in the mail. They will be marked important tax information enclosed. And you want to also be aware of forms that you might not have had in the prior year that you may have in the current year. If something new has happened, maybe in 2018 you weren't retired and in 2019 you did retire. So you're going to have a whole new set of forms. You might have Social Security, you might have these 1099 R's I was just talking about. So I want to kind of just give a little broad overview of those. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. You can talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can give your question to Lori C., and she will write it down and bring it in to me, and then we'll do our best to answer these questions. All right, so some of the other tax documents. We have, as I mentioned, a Social Security statement, possibly. If you sell your home, you may have a 1099-S, S as in Sam. But if at the time you were selling your home, if you lived and owned it 2 out of the last 5 years, then you probably checked a box that you qualified for an exemption if the gain isn't over $250,000 as a single person or $500,000 as a married filing joint couple. If you didn't have a gain in excess of those amounts and you lived and owned in the home two out of 5 years, then you're not going to have a 1099-S. But your preparer may still want to look at your settlement sheet, because if you itemize, there is important information about real estate taxes on there. If you had investment property and you sold it, chances are, again, you will have a 1099-S, and your preparer would still want to look at your settlement sheet, because there would be commissions and selling expenses related to the sale that would be very important for them to include in calculating the gain or loss on the sale of any investment property that you might have. There's a lot of other forms that may be important. I'm just going to kind of go over a couple more. For example, a 1099-G, which might be state or local tax refunds. I think there's a 1099 for unemployment income. If you are a partner in a partnership or a shareholder in an S-corp or a beneficiary of an estate or a trust, you will have a K-1. And the K-1s look different depending on what kind of entity is issuing the K-1. So up in the corner, it would show if it was a 1065 from a partnership, an 1120S from an S-corp, or a 1041 from an estate or trust. So those K-1s aren't due the same time, so you might have to wait even longer for those. An estate may have a fiscal year, and for trust and certain entities, the tax due date will depend on what fiscal year. If it's a calendar year, it might be April 15th. Partnerships, March 15th. So you may have to wait a little longer for those. If those entities file for an extension, it could be even longer, and you may have to file for an extension for your own personal return if you don't have that information. Things like gambling winnings, a 1099-G, mortgage interest statement, 1098. So gathering all those tax documents, very important. And again, important tax information, typically enclosed. Quite often, the 1098, the information for your interest, mortgage interest, and real estate taxes, quite often they include that with your December bill. So if you're not paying attention and you just look at the bill and stuff the rest of the stuff in your filing cabinet, you might not realize the 1098 was attached or included in your December bill. So watch for that. Sometimes when people request online access, paperless, they go paperless, they don't realize that that might include the tax documents. If it's paperless and you're sitting there waiting and thinking it's coming in the mail, but you elected all this paperless, options when you sign up for an account, you have to be aware that you might have to go online, log in, and then look across the tabs on whatever page or whatever site you're on and see if there's a documents tab or a tax documents tab, and you may have to print off your tax information yourself if you have online access. So watch out for that. So you gather all of these tax documents. There is a lot of important information on those tax documents for your preparer or that you may have to use yourself. As I mentioned, the qualified charitable distribution doesn't show up there at all. You have to have known if you did a qualified charitable distribution during the year. So marry that information to that 1099-R when you're getting ready to do your tax returns. But what else might be going on in your life? Personal information. Is it going to matter if you might have had a marital status change? You might have gotten divorced, you might be separated, or you might have had a spouse pass away. So your status may change on your tax filing, and you have to remember to update that status and see how it's going to apply. An address change. Did someone retire? Did they change jobs? If someone's changed jobs, it may impact your local filing. It may impact your state filing. Sometimes we might have someone change jobs and start working in New Jersey or New York, and it could impact that. It's going to be important information. Have you been a victim of identity theft? And did you contact the IRS? You might have a PIN that has to be used when filing your tax return. You might have to paper file your tax return because of that. Dependents. Was there a change in your dependents? We heard from Michelle earlier. What you might not factor in is that in a prior year, your dependent might have been, 16 and qualified for this child tax credit, and now they no longer qualify for the $2,000 child tax credit. They only qualify for the $500 dependent credit. Very big difference there, and you don't want surprises. And the sooner you kind of get your information together and get it to your preparer or prepare it yourself, the sooner you're going to kind of know what your situation is so you know what to expect. If you kind of run the numbers now and you find out you're going to owe, well, you have till April 15th to kind of get that money together. If you get your numbers together and it looks like you have a big refund, let's get those returns filed. You know, the scammers who are out there are going to be filing your tax return very early. So the earlier you can file your tax return, the more you would prevent that situation as well. So kind of go through and try to check all this information when you can. Why not? It's just the returns are easier to file now with so many people taking the standard deduction and not itemizing. It makes it a lot faster process for many people. So in those circumstances, once you have your tax documents, you can get going on your tax preparation. Folks, tonight we are talking about getting ready for tax season, getting ready to get your tax return done, trying to help you get those done very efficiently and quickly. If you have questions, you can talk live on air with us, or if you're not comfortable talking live on air, you can just give your question to Lori C. and she'll write it down and bring it in to me. The phone number is 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And you can also send questions through the website, yourfinancialchoices.com. We'll be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
WDIY 88.1, it's 6:30. Your current temperature in Lehigh Valley is 36. Tonight is going to be mostly clear with the low around 18. For your Thursday, it's going to be partly sunny with the high near 35. Thursday night is going to be low around 25. Friday, starting your weekend off, is going to be partly sunny with a high near 41. Friday night is going to be low around 30. And Saturday, you're going to have a chance of rain and snow before 10 a.m. Then a chance of rain, mostly cloudy, with a high near 43. And for Saturday night, it's going to be more rain and snow between 10 p.m. and 4 a.m. with low around 31. Sunday, partly sunny with a high near 43. And Sunday night, low around 31. Now back to your financial choices with Lori Siebert.
Thank you, Shandi. I just want to get back to Michelle. And I found on a website, wageworks.com, that if your spouse has a dependent care, we know you don't have a spouse, Michelle, but if your spouse has a dependent care FSA, you may each contribute up to $2,500 into your respective accounts. The annual dependent care FSA contribution limit for married couples who file their taxes jointly is $5,000. But elsewhere on here, it does say for 2020 that the maximum is $5,000. So I can't readily find out exactly if head of household has some different amount. So you might want to check with your HR and if they offer the flexible spending account for dependent care, what are your options there and how much can you do with your filing status, okay? So thank you for calling in. Folks, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, and you can talk live on air or off air. If you're not comfortable, just give your question to Lori C. She'll write it down and bring it in to me. We're going over getting ready for tax season and some things you have to pay attention to. We talked about the different forms that you're going to want to watch for in the mail. One other thing I forgot, I wanted to point it out about the 1099, the INT and the DIV. If you are preparing the return yourself, if you have a preparer prepare it, they know what to pay attention to on those documents. But if you're preparing your own tax return, a couple little notes on the 1099 INT. If on that interest statement you happen to cash U.S. savings bonds during the year, that would be coded as U.S. Treasury or U.S. government interest. That is important to know because that interest would not be taxable for Pennsylvania. And if you're using software, you want to make sure you're putting it in the right box because while it's taxable for federal, it is not taxable for Pennsylvania. there could be tax-exempt interest you have. And tax-exempt interest might be is tax-free for federal. That's talking about, when we talk about tax-exempt interest, it's usually municipals, like bonds that people invest in school districts and general obligations of different localities. Tax-exempt municipal interest is tax-free for federal. For the states, it's only really tax-free if it's related to your state. So if I have a Pennsylvania bond, it's not taxable for Fed and it's not taxable for Pennsylvania. But that Pennsylvania bond interest would be taxable if it was in New Jersey or some other state. So you kind of have to pay attention carefully when you have tax-exempt interest. So important information on those 1099s. On a 1099 DIV, I think it's important to note that we have something called Box 1A is ordinary dividends. Box 1A is your total dividends. Box 1B is something called qualified dividends. And some people think it's both of them total equal your dividends. No, 1B is the qualified dividends. It is what qualifies in 1A for a lower tax rate. So if Box 1A is, you know, $10,000 and one Box 1B is $8,000. What that's telling you is, of my $10,000 of dividends, $8,000 of it qualifies for a lower tax rate. And that lower tax rate could be zero, it could be 15%, or it could be 20%. It all depends on how much your income is. So if you have, if you're in a low tax bracket, 12% or lower, those qualified dividends would be taxed at zero. If the dividends are, if you're in a like higher than the 12% bracket, but not like the top, then typically they're at 15. And then if you get really high income, then it could be more. We had a question off air, Sammy from Easton, and it says, I'm over 59 and a half and took out some money from my IRA to buy a car. I had federal withholding taken out, but no state. Do I have to tell the state? Sammy, no, you don't. It's not reportable for the state, because in Pennsylvania, because you're Easton, so you're a Pennsylvania resident. If you are over 59 and a half, that's a qualified distribution. You can take money out. And Pennsylvania does not tax our retirement income if we're taking it out under normal rules. So if you were younger than age 59 and a half, you would have to report it, but it might still not be taxable, because Pennsylvania tells us if we take it out early, they do like a cost basis kind of allocation. So your contributions that you put into that retirement account that you already paid taxes on, because remember, Pennsylvania doesn't give us a deduction for contributions into a retirement account. So those original contributions that we put in, Pennsylvania say that's what comes out first. So the tax, the after-tax dollars come out first for Pennsylvania purposes in an early distribution. But if you basically wipe out your entire account, then Pennsylvania is going to say, hey, the earnings on that account would be income taxable to Pennsylvania in an early distribution, all right? So at age 59 and a half, for federal, we pay income tax on our distributions from our IRAs. You were right to have withholdings on that. For Pennsylvania, 59 and a half, you're good to go. You're correct. No withholdings, and you do not have to report it. Although on the Schedule W-2S, it would probably show up. It just would not come over as taxable. If you're self-preparing, you have to make sure that your software, that you're entering it correctly. And if you're paper filing it with like a pencil, then you definitely have to make sure that you don't include it. So good question. Thank you. Again, questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Earlier, we talked with Michelle about education. This is something that people do miss. If you have children who are in college, or you yourself are in college or taking classes that are part of the qualified education expenses, which is a little bit more complicated, and it depends on which kind of education credit you might be taking advantage of, which is a whole show in itself. This is just kind of a nudge for you to be aware that you may qualify for education credits and or a education deduction. So pay attention to that for 2019. For people who use They're 529s. If you're taking money out of a 529 to cover all of the education expenses, you can't double dip. There is something called a coordination of benefits. So you have to coordinate it. So sometimes what we'll do is we'll have people take at least $4,000 out of pocket to pay for tuition if their income otherwise, you know, allows them for the education credit, for the American Opportunity Credit, like we talked about earlier, for married filing joint. If your adjusted gross income is under $160,000, then you could qualify for the American Opportunity Credit if you have a child, four-year program, you know, follow all the rules, you know, that kind of thing. If you have $4,000 out of pocket and you're under those income limits, you could qualify for a $2,500 tax credit. And that's like a real credit, and at least $1,000 of it's refundable. So you could use the tax credit to offset the tax. And if it more than offsets the tax, you could still have $1,000 refundable. And so you just have to make sure you understand all the rules and the implications of doing it. So, you know, when we talk about these things on the air, it's about education. Each person's situation is different, and you have to make sure that you're following all the rules. Okay. So this is just FYI, basically. So the American Opportunity Credit, the Lifetime Learning Credit, is available for folks who, you know, we might not be in a four-year college education anymore. We might be getting our master's. Well, if our income was within these ranges or below these ranges, we could qualify for a Lifetime Learning Credit. That also is a tax credit. And then we have the tuition and fees deduction and, you know, various other education opportunities. Healthcare. I've had people say, you know, oh, you have to wait for me to prove that I have health care. I'm waiting for that 1095. Well, we don't really have to prove that you had health care anymore. There's no shared responsibility, I don't think, any longer. So, but if you received a 1095A, which is from the marketplace where you were getting a premium tax credit, or you may qualify for a premium tax credit, we definitely want that 1095A. If you have a health savings account, which means you have a high deductible health plan, we would want to know about that, because if you have a high deductible health plan, you would be eligible for a health savings account. That is a huge tax deduction for people. If you do it through payroll, you could do a payroll deduction for single family or for a family plan, much bigger deduction. And if you don't fully fund it through your employer, you have until April 15th to contribute additional dollars for 2019, and you can get that deduction on your return. Now, we like it to go through the employer plan the best, because it's not going to be subject to federal tax, state tax, Medicare tax, FICA tax. So we love doing it through the employer. But if you didn't realize you hadn't maxed it, then this is a great opportunity to get it on your tax return for the balance that you didn't fully fund it. Get the deduction, at least you're saving federal tax, and we can get a deduction for Pennsylvania and save some more state tax. So if you're doing it on the tax return and not through the employer, then, you know, it's not quite the same savings, but still huge savings. So we would want to know about a health savings account. And again, think you have to have a high deductible health plan. It has to be a qualifying high deductible health plan. And generally, people who do this know about the health savings account. You also have to consider that the employer, if the employer is putting any amount in to the health savings account for you, that counts towards that max. So you, if the employer puts in $1,000 and you're single and the amount is around $3,500, well, then you could put in another $2,500. Let's say you only did $1,000 through payroll deduction, so that would total $2,000. The employer in your $2,000, you could put in the additional amount to get you to the max by April 15th to get the deduction on your tax return. Some other items of income. We talked a little bit about, you know, wages, interest, dividends, U.S. savings bonds, Social Security or disability income. You're going to get a Social Security statement in the mail. If you're self-employed, I mentioned a 1099 MIS that you may get if you if someone paid you more than $600, but someone might not have issued you a 1099 MES, you still have to report the income when you're self-employed. It is your requirement. It's like, it's not like, oh, no one ever sent it to me, so therefore the IRS doesn't know and I'm not going to report it. No, if you're self-employed and you're taking in the money and you have the revenue, and you have to report that income regardless if you get the 1099 or not. Because if something happens to maybe a vendor who paid you and they never gave you a 1099, let's say they get audited 2 years later and they say, whoops, we just missed it. We're going to send that 1099 to Sherry right now and it was $10,000. Well, if you got $10,000 and you didn't think you had to report it because you didn't have a 1099, then they get audited, now you're in trouble. So report all the income. We like to just make sure that if a vendor is reimbursing you for expenses, that you understand if they've included that in the 1099. Because if they included any reimbursements in the gross they've reported to you, we want to make sure we take those deductions. If they didn't report the reimbursements to you, then you just report the clean 1099 and then you don't take the deduction because they didn't report it to you. So we just like to make sure that your records match with what the 1099 received. We talked a little bit about the investments and the 1099 INT and DIV. There could be some rental income. We can talk about that in the last part of the show here. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We'll be back in just a moment.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Tune up your week with a great variety of jazz music on WDIY, Monday through Friday nights from 9 to 11, offers many choices from the world of jazz, featuring traditional to modern styles, plus Swing Sunday at 5 p.m. and improvisational jazz on the bridge Sunday nights at 10 p.m. Listen for new releases, interviews with artists, and information on upcoming performances right here on WDIY.
Welcome back to Your Financial Choices right here on WDIY 88.1, podcast of prior shows available at WDIY.org under Current Affairs. And is it Current Affairs? Sorry, Public Affairs. Public Affairs. Go four down, and there's Your Financial Choices. Thank you, Shandi. So, Public Affairs. That's hard for me to remember. I've always said local programming, so I'm glad someone pointed it out to me. But boy, my brain just needs to rewire itself to remember that it's public affairs. And for example, last week was the Secure Act, and we didn't have any calls last week or questions, and I was really surprised because there are a lot of changes with the Secure Act, and I think it could be pretty important to pay attention to for a lot of people. So tonight, getting ready for, you know, tax return preparation. We want you to be early to the game and get your tax return filed. You do find out that people who are scammers, if they get your information, they file those tax returns really quick. So one way to avoid having a problem with that is you file first, because the IRS takes the return that's filed first. I've had happen probably once or twice in my career where we go to file the tax return and the IRS says, you know, it's already received. We get an alert and we have to contact the IRS, and then we have to paper file the return, and then they reconcile everything and they, you know, realize, you know, when we prove identity and things like that, that we're the actual filer. And it ends up working out, but it's a problem and it's a pain. So file your tax return when you have all your information. Not everyone can do that because sometimes you're waiting a really long time for your information. But if you can, it's better to get started early. I mentioned investments. We had already talked about some of the typical investments we think about. You might have rental properties. That information is usually, you should have, you know, it all done by December 31st. It's not like you have to wait for more information. The rental property, cash basis taxpayers were reporting the income and the deductions as they occur. So it should be, you should have all that information December 31st. I mentioned, K-1 information. If you're in a business, you have a partnership or an S-Corp, that is a little bit more complicated and you would have to wait for a K-1. Retirement, we talked about the 1099-Rs. You might also want to think about, when we talk about retirement, maybe you're not retired yet, maybe you're working and you want to put money into retirement. If you have an employer and you're doing it through an employer plan, you might have enough cash flow that maybe you would want to do a little more. Depending on what your income is and what your filing status is, you might be able to do a deductible IRA. You might be able to do Roth IRAs. So you want to review that as a planning opportunity if you have the cash available and you have till April 15th to fund deductible IRAs and you have till April 15th to fund Roth IRAs. Let's quickly talk about itemized deductions versus standard deduction. As I mentioned earlier, so many more people are just using the standard deduction because the standard deduction went up so much with the tax reform. So married filing joint, the standard deduction for 2019 is $24,400. Single people is $12,200. Head of household is $18,350. Michelle, you want to make sure you're using head of household married filing status if you're still listening, because I hope that you know that the head of household status does have a higher standard deduction. That doesn't help you with the AGI, but it might help with income tax. And if married filing separate is $12,200, if you are over 65, you get an additional, I think it's $1,300. I don't see it here. Oh, if you're over, over age 65, I believe it's an additional $1,300. I have a different book at the office that I can look at for this, and I know where the numbers are, and I'm using a different one tonight for the show, so I'm not finding it as fast. But you get a little extra amount if you're over 65 on those standard deductions. So sometimes it just makes itemizing not feasible. With the SECURE Act, they did lower the AGI limitation on the medical expenses back to 7.5%. So if your medical expenses exceed 7.5% of your adjusted gross income, then that is the amount you could deduct for medical. But you still have to add that to all the other deductions to see if you're over the standard deduction amount. So married filing joint, $24,400. The single I said was $12,200. It's more likely that someone who's single would itemize than someone who's married filing joint because the taxes are capped. The tax deduction is capped at $10,000. Whether you're single or married filing joint. That's why single people are more likely to itemize than married filing joint. Because if someone's working and they have high state and local taxes and they own a home and they have real estate taxes, chances are they're capped at 10. Well, then the single standard deduction is $12,200, so you would only need another $2,200 of deductions. If you're a homeowner and you have mortgage interest, chances are you're going to be over the standard deduction. Then if you're charitably inclined, you might have some charitable deductions you could add to that. So it's more likely that someone who is single would itemize than married filing joint. Now, young people who aren't homeowners yet, chances are you might not be over that amount because your taxes would have to be 10 and your charitable contributions would, have to be $2,200 or more. And a lot of times people starting out, they're not owning a home yet, hopefully putting money in their retirement accounts, they may not have, the cash to fund a lot of charitable giving. So they might not get over those amounts. Some other miscellaneous items that you'd want to pay attention to is things like foreign information. This isn't on a lot of people's radar. You might have signature authority over a foreign bank account. Maybe you have a parent, a grandparent in a foreign country, and maybe they have asked you to be on their account in case anything happens to them. If you have signature authority over a foreign bank account, you have to report it. If the bank account is under $10,000, you just have to disclose that you have signature authority, but you don't have to do any further reporting. If it's more than $10,000, then there's further reporting that has to be done, and you either do it on your own or you work with your tax preparer to get the information that's needed. It may include just filing a certain information with the banking industry, or it might mean doing, you know, foreign asset reporting. We have even seen where people work in corporations who may have a position, a controller, or in the finance department where they have signature authority. That would be reportable. And typically those corporations will alert you if you have that authority and all the bank information that you would have to report. And it can be quite comprehensive as well. So foreign reporting, you want to watch out for. That was something else I wanted to mention about the 1099 DIV or the consolidated 1099 that would include the dividend statement. This might be something that people miss if they're self-preparing. And that is, if you have mutual funds and certain stocks that you own that might have foreign taxes that are paid on it. So quite often you might have a mutual fund that might have some emerging markets or Euro-Pacific type of investments. If you have those, the mutual fund company might report to you foreign dividends, foreign taxes that you've paid on those investments. That foreign taxes is a tax deduction. And if it's under $300 if you're single or under $600 if you're married filing joint, you don't have to even file a special form to get a tax credit for that foreign tax paid through your dividend statement. You just take it as a credit against your taxes. And there's a, you know, a special box for that. If it's over $300 single or over $600 married filing joint, then you would need to file a Form 1116. But the reason I'm mentioning it is I think a lot of people just forget about that foreign tax. And the 1116 is a little bit more of a complicated form, but if you have tax software, it's not bad. But if it's under those amounts, then you don't even have to do that tax form. And it's like free money. I tell people if the foreign tax dividend is like $20, it's still $20. I mean, if you found $20 on the floor, wouldn't you pick it up? Yeah. So don't miss that deduction, the foreign tax deduction. The other thing that we're seeing more of on the 1099s is something called a Section 199A dividend. And that is with the tax reform, there is a new deduction called a qualified business income deduction. And, you know, there's certain income requirements. I could do a show on that some night. There's certain income and certain kinds of qualified business income where you can get a deduction up to 20% of your business income, depending on what kind of business you're in and how much income you have on your tax return. But what a lot of people might miss on their 1099 is if you're investing in what's called a real estate investment trust, it's a REIT, those quite often qualify for this qualified business income deduction. And if you and your advisor decided to go into one of these REITs, and maybe you haven't had it in the past because they could be a little tricky, you might not be looking for it. But those dollars, if you enter it on your tax return, let's say it's, you know, $200, 20% would be a $40 deduction. Not a huge deduction, but if these dollars are bigger than that, it might amount to something. So just kind of have it on your radar. All right. So in getting ready to do your tax return, to recap, you want to get all those tax forms together. And the other thing that would be very important to have if you're providing information to a tax preparer is, did you make any estimated tax payments for federal, state, or local? If you made quarterly payments, sometimes what happens is if you're working with a preparer, they'll tell you oh, do, you know, some number, $1,000 a quarter, let's say, for federal. And let's say you forgot about it and you didn't do it in September or January. Well, you need to let your preparer know, because they have no idea whether you made the quarterly estimates as they recommended to you. So you want to make sure you tell them. I have had people increase those estimates, and I have had people decrease those estimates. If you don't tell us, we don't know it. We might assume, well, we don't assume, but someone could assume that you made the estimates as were recommended. So you want to make sure that you confirm if you've done estimates. So it is tax filing season. The IRS is accepting tax returns. So it is, you know, ready to go if people have their information ready. And if you have just a W-2, well, January 31st is right around the corner. If you haven't received your 1099, you know, yet, it will be coming in the next few days. So get all your other information together and get ready and get your tax return prepared. Folks, next week, we are going to have a kind of a little bit of a different topic, putting your financial life in order. Quite often during tax season, I do a lot of tax shows, but I think tax season's getting a lot easier. So we're going to throw in some other topics, putting your financial life in order. The reason I thought this was important is because at tax time, you kind of like have this all in your face, your financial information. You say, oh my gosh, this is how much money I made. This is how much I owe in taxes. So I thought it's a good time to kind of get your financial life in order when you're also putting your tax documents together. So next week, we're going to talk about putting your financial life in order. Coming up next, we have Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. I want to thank our listeners tonight for calling in with questions. I appreciate it. Thank you, Lori. Thank you, Shandi. Thank you, listeners. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive, make the best of your financial choices, and have a great week.